You're listening to News Talk 920, KPSI.
If we could talk to the animals, just imagine it, chatting with a chimp and chimpanzee.
This is Animals Today, featuring discussions about domestic pets, wild animals, and encouraging compassion and respect for all living creatures. Live from Palm Springs, here's Dr. Lori Kirshner.
Study every creature's language so I could speak to all of them on sight. If Prince said, can he talk a crab or maybe pelican? You'd say like Kelly can, and you'd be right. So if you just stop and think of it, there ain't no doubt of it. I'm gonna win a place in history. A man who walks with the animals, talks with the animals, grunts and squeaks and squawks with the animals. And they could squeak and squawk and speak and talk to me.
Here, kitty kitty. Hi, welcome to Animals Today. I'm Dr. Lori Kirshner. Thanksgiving's almost here, and we are all familiar with the purpose of what has primarily been identified as a secular holiday celebrated mainly in Canada and the United States. Thanksgiving is a harvest day, harvest festival. Traditionally, it's a time to give thanks for the harvest and express gratitude in general. Thanksgiving has come to mean many different things to different people over the centuries. For many, it brings families and friends together and or time to give thanks for life's blessings and the little things in life. And many tend to focus on the feast on this day. And for most Americans, think of turkey. The two just go hand in hand. I even hear people call this holiday Turkey Day. So why is that? Why do we eat a turkey on Thanksgiving? Well, simply put, it's part of tradition and custom. I don't think anyone knows exactly when or why we started eating turkey on Thanksgiving, but it's a practice that Americans have been doing for a very long time. Most likely, the tradition began because turkey is an animal native to North America, and Thanksgiving celebrates the pilgrims' arrival and first harvest in what is now the United States. I've often spoken on Animals Today about so many traditions and customs involving the abuse and mistreatment and killing of animals. Animals continue to be exploited and abused primarily because it's tradition. Oh, and in most cases, these traditions continue to be popular because humans tend to profit from them and are in some way entertained or amused by them. Bullfighting, rodeos, circuses, even many zoos continue to exploit animals and treat animals inhumanely for the ridiculous reason of, well, we've been doing it this way for years, so that's the way we're doing it now. Now, you may ask, what the heck is Dr. Lori talking about? What's so bad about the tradition of eating turkey on Thanksgiving? Well, we're going to find out, because that's the topic of today's show, Life Inside Factory Farms. And we're going to be discussing the emotional and psychological toll that factory farms take on these living creatures. I'm hoping that after today's show, you'll learn something about what happens inside factory farms, and you will at least think about the cruelty and inhumane treatment of these animals. And it may even change your habits and what you're accustomed to do or what you are taught to do, simply because that's the way we've been doing it for years. I'm hoping that today's show will ruin your enjoyment of the turkey you choose to eat this holiday. Am I joking? Well, sort of, but not really. I just want people to start thinking about these issues. I want people to know the facts and start thinking about things that in general people don't want to think about, or they want to say they want to remain ignorant to, so they can go on their traditional and customary ways and not feel bad about it. I guess the question is, would you be willing to break a tradition if you knew that the tradition involved the cruel and inhumane treatment of animals? If the answer is yes, or even maybe, then I feel we're moving in the right direction. If the answer is no, then at least I can try to make you think about it. Our guest today will be speaking about what happens to the animals in factory farms, but I can think of at least four or five reasons why not to eat turkey on Thanksgiving. Most of the turkeys which are sold at the grocery store are genetically modified. Factory farming of turkeys is damaging to the environment. Turkeys are raised in extremely filthy conditions. Factory farming of turkeys is harmful to workers. Turkeys in factory farms experience pain and suffering. But who cares about the suffering and cruelty? After all, they're just dumb turkeys, right? Actually, the truth of the matter is that the turkey is a naturally intelligent, playful, and sociable animal. Did you know that? You know, Thanksgiving comes around and people just naturally think that it's a reason to eat turkey. We've really become accustomed to it. We fail to see the cruelty and the lack of compassion involved. On factory farms, turkeys live in tightly packed sheds for months. They stand in waste. Urine and ammonia fumes burn their eyes and their lungs and other painful and terrible things, which I'm not going to get into now, that are done to these birds to keep these animals from killing each other because of the crowded conditions. And did you know that approximately 46 million turkeys are slaughtered every year at Thanksgiving? 46 million out of a total of 250 million, which are slaughtered in the United States each year. Remember the Sarah Palin's interview in front of a turkey slaughter operation? And Sarah Palin was speaking just at the time when a turkey was being tortured and slaughtered behind her. Didn't seem to bother Sarah Palin that much, but it sure as heck bothered me. And I'd have to assume that it bothered some people watching that on national TV, because people really don't want to know what goes on in these factory farms, or they're in denial. And they don't want to have that picture in their heads while they're trying to enjoy their turkey on Thanksgiving. You're aware of the National Thanksgiving Turkey Presentation, the ceremony that takes place at the White House each year? The President of the United States is presented with a live domestic turkey, and in 1989, President George H.W. Bush decided to pardon the turkey at the last minute. And this custom of pardoning the turkey was at that point formalized. And since then, the presidents to follow, Clinton and Bush too, pardon their turkeys. And hopefully our current president will pardon the turkey that's presented to him. Now, a ridiculous custom in my opinion, because what's the point? This particular pardon lucky turkey gets the gift of life and gains all the media attention and lives to their ripe old age in a peace and living in a happy life at some farm and is able to die a natural death. All the other turkeys and the turkey the president ultimately decides to eat gets to be tortured and killed. So it really doesn't accomplish anything in terms of animal welfare directly and acutely, but at least we are sort of moving in the right direction. We're seeing the leader of the country demonstrating some sense of compassion and kindness to a living creature, which is the step needed for change to occur. Try pardoning a turkey this year. Consider it. Consider being a vegetarian this Thanksgiving. Listen, in most supermarkets you can find vegetarian turkey substitutes that do give you the texture and taste of meat, like tofurkey or unturkey. I've had that, tofurkey. People are saying, it's not the same thing. Well, try it. Just try it. In my family, my mom makes such a huge Thanksgiving dinner, which with so many dishes, sweet potatoes and casseroles and mashed potatoes, cranberry sauce, pumpkin pie. I mean, the turkey's really not even needed. It's like a side dish. Who needs it? Consider giving the big bird a break this Thanksgiving. And there's a good chance you're going to find it very liberating. And it just may open your mind to new possibilities. I'm Dr. Lori Kirshner. You're listening to Animals Today on News Talk 920 KPSI. And I want to welcome a very special guest for today's show, president and co-founder of Farm Sanctuary, Gene Bauer. Welcome, Gene. Thanks for being with us on Animals Today.
Hello. It's great to be with you.
Gene, I want my listeners to know that you were my guest last season on Animals Today, speaking about Proposition 2, which was approved in California. It was about a year ago, and you and your organization was instrumental in passing that, and what was a wonderful step in the right direction in terms of how animals are treated in factory farms. Gene, why don't you start by telling us what is Farm Sanctuary and what are you trying to accomplish?
Yes, sure, absolutely. Farm Sanctuary is a nonprofit organization. We operate two shelters, one in New York State and one in California, where we take care of farm animals who have been rescued from abuse. We've literally taken living animals out of trash cans, or off of piles of dead animals where they've just been discarded. So we rescue animals, and we also advocate for reforms, and we try to pass laws to prevent some of the worst abuses these animals currently face. And as you mentioned, Proposition 2 in California was one of the efforts we were very involved with, and that was a measure to require that certain animals at least have enough space to stand up, lay down, turn around, and stretch their limbs. And if you think about it, it's pretty crazy that we even had to go to the ballot box to enact this basic reform. But, you know, on today's farms, bad has become normal. The animals are seen more as commodities than as living, feeling creatures. And they're put in small cages and crates where they can't even move. So, and I think most people are shocked when they learn about what happens to animals on today's farms. And that's another part of our work, is to educate people and encourage citizens to make choices that are more humane and that are consistent with their own values. Because I think most people, you know, don't think it's okay to treat animals so badly. And so we work to educate people. And, you know, as you were talking about earlier, you know, Thanksgiving is a time when most people in the United States, or many people, I don't know if it's most people anymore, but many people, you know, celebrate with the body of a dead bird in the middle of their table. And it really doesn't have to be that way. There's plenty of other better alternatives. And we just want people to think and to make more sensible, more humane choices.
Why should an ordinary person care about the animals in factory farms? And would you please also define factory farm?
Yeah, well, factory farming is something that has developed over the latter half of the 20th century, where animals are increasingly seen just as commodities. It's really, factory farming commodifies sentient life, where living animals are seen as pieces of meat from the day they're born until the day they're killed, and where, frankly, workers at these farms are also seen just as tools of production, and consumers are seen just as markets. It's a place where we've become removed from our food sources. And it's bad for the animals, it's bad for workers, it's bad for the environment. Factory farms are terrible in terms of polluting the environment. And it's also bad for consumers. So it's a system that needs complete overhaul. And the reason it's important is that most citizens are unwittingly supporting this system by buying meat, milk, and eggs that in the vast majority of instances are raised in these industrialized factory farms. And factory farming, in addition to being bad to the animals, environment, and laborers and consumers, as I mentioned, you know, also uses lots of antibiotics. You now have the development of antibiotic-resistant bacteria.
Mm-hmm.
So we have these things that are now posing a risk to consumers. And we have emerging new pathogens, things like swine flu and bird flu and mad cow disease. All of these problems emerged out of a system that is cutting costs and trying to, you know, produce food as cheaply as possible. But when you do that, there are other costs. So although meat may appear to be cheap at the counter, it's actually quite expensive when you look at the cost to produce it. For example, environmental pollution that needs to be cleaned up, health hazards that need to be dealt with, antibiotic-resistant bacteria and so on, and global warming. Another thing people need to recognize is that the livestock industry is a greater contributor to global warming than the entire transportation industry. So our food choices every day have profound impact, and that's why it's so important to look at these issues and to think about them.
Gene, it must be a horrible and stressful existence to be an animal simply raised to be slaughtered. Tell us what it's like for these animals.
Well, you know, in the case of turkeys, they have been genetically altered to the point where they cannot reproduce naturally anymore. So all commercial turkeys raised in the United States today are products of genetic manipulation and artificial insemination. And so after they hatch, they're put in these massive warehouses where they're packed by the thousands. They live in, you know, filthy conditions where their urine and feces just collect day after day. And then they're finally slaughtered at a very young age. And sometimes these birds have been genetically altered to grow so fast that they have heart attacks at just a few weeks old. So, you know, it's a system where the animals are seen as nothing but products. And when you have that attitude towards other animals, it's something that can spread. And as I mentioned before, it affects how workers are treated and how consumers are treated, how the environment is treated. It's bad for everybody. But of course, the number one victim are the animals who are raised in these atrocious conditions. And in this country, there are literally 10 billion farm animals raised and slaughtered. And it needs to change. It's bad for the animals, bad for the environment, bad for us.
Stay with us here on Animals Today. I'm Dr. Lori Kirshner. We're going to continue learning about factory farms right here on News Talk 920 KPSI. Welcome back to Animals Today. I'm Dr. Lori Kirshner. We're speaking with Gene Bauer. He's the president and co-founder of the well-known nonprofit foundation Farm Sanctuary. I urge you to check out this the incredible things this organization is doing, farmsanctuary.org. Gene, I think it'll help us learn about the issues that are important to Farm Sanctuary by going through some of your major campaigns. So let's start, if we could, with the No Downers campaign. What is that about?
Yes, well, we started back in 1986 when we rescued a sheep off of a pile of dead animals behind a stockyard. And as we approached this pile, there were dead cows and dead pigs and dead sheep and maggots that were so thick you could literally hear them buzzing. Oh. And off of this pile, a lamb lifts her head. So we were stunned and took her to the veterinarian thinking she'd have to be euthanized, but thankfully she recovered and she lived with us for more than 10 years, and that was Hilda, our first rescue. So as we looked more into this issue, we found animals left for dead routinely at stockyards and farms and slaughterhouses, and we started a campaign to prevent downed animals, and these are animals too sick to walk, from being marketed and slaughtered for human food. And it took many turns, and certain stockyards agreed voluntarily not to take in downed animals, but the USDA kept saying that they wanted to send them to the USDA slaughterhouse to be killed and used for human food. We argued that these animals might be diseased, and in addition to being cruel to the animals, it could pose a threat to human consumers. USDA continued to speak out against our position in saying that it was okay for these sick, diseased animals to go into the food supply. In fact, at one point, we petitioned them and said diseased animals should not go into the food supply, and their response to us was that it was allowable and legal and appropriate and acceptable for diseased animals to go into the food supply.
Wow.
Pretty shocking. So, but what happened in 2003 was that mad cow disease was discovered in the U.S. in a downed cow, and after that point, the USDA came around and said, okay, no more downed cows in the food supply. And we were happy with that, although their policy was not well adhered to or well policed, and there have been some violations and some problems with it. But, you know, so that's a step in the right direction, and we think all downed animals, including pigs and sheep and other animals too sick to walk, in addition to cows, should not go into the food supply. So that's one of our big campaigns.
Yeah, you know, Gene, I'm glad you explained that because I didn't know what downed meant. I didn't know what downed animals were, so I'm really glad you explained it. So, but in addition, I know you mentioned this, it just seems so cruel to the animals. So do they just drag these dead animals to the slaughterhouse? I mean, literally drag them?
Yes, yes. These animals that are too sick to walk are literally dragged onto trucks with a chain around a leg, and then they're transported to the slaughterhouse and then dragged off. Sometimes they're also pushed with forklifts.
Oh, my God.
It's brutal.
It's
and,
sickening.
Sometimes these, you know, and when we're talking about cows, these are large animals.
Yeah.
And they're oftentimes injured in this process.
Ugh.
They're also sometimes left for hours or days without food and water. They can't get to food or water troughs. And so they may starve. They're not given veterinary care, needless to say. They might be trampled by other animals herded through the facilities.
So it's
unacceptable, and it never should happen in
right.
the first place. And it's kind of crazy we even have to campaign against it, frankly.
It is incredible we have to campaign against this. They're already suffering. Just let's torture them more. I mean,
yeah.
It's incredible. Gene, next, would you talk about the anti-confinement campaign? You briefly mentioned it early on. And as I mentioned early on, Farm Sanctuary was instrumental in getting California Prop 2 passed.
Yes, yes. Well, our anti-confinement campaign seeks to prohibit some of the worst confinement systems. And three of those include veal crates, where young calves are chained by the neck in 2-foot-wide wooden crates for their whole lives, unable to walk, turn around, exercise. They're not able to go outside. They're not able to socialize with other calves. And that's all they know for their whole lives. So we think they need to have more space and need to be treated with more respect. Another of the confinement systems we're challenging are the use of gestation crates. These are 2-foot-wide metal enclosures where breeding pigs are kept during their gestation period or their pregnancy. That's why they're called gestation crates.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's about a four-month period. And then right before giving birth, they put them into another crate called a farrowing crate, where they'll keep them for about 3 weeks to give birth and nurse their young, and then they put them right back into the gestation crate. So these female breeding pigs live a constant cycle of impregnation, birth, and reimpregnation. That entire time they're in 2-foot-wide enclosures, unable to turn around or stretch their limbs or to exercise or to do what pigs normally do. They never go outside to root. They never get to interact in a positive way with their young or with other animals. And we think those crates also are unacceptable. You know, factory farming has gone too far. These animals need to be seen more as living, feeling animals, not just as piglet-making machines.
I've seen pictures of that, and I had no idea that they stay in those 2-foot crates, which the pig is just like overhanging. I mean, he's just coming out of the crate. I had no idea the pigs stay in the crate for pretty much their lifetime.
That's right, their whole life.
It's incredible.
They go from the gestation crate to the farrowing crate and back to the gestation
crate.
Wow, wow. Majority in the gestation crate. And these animals, you know, they're constantly rubbing against the metal bars. They have bruises and abrasions and sores on their bodies because of it. And they stand and lay on concrete flooring. They're not given any straw bedding. They suffer both physical as well as psychological problems. I mean, they're literally driven mad. And resort to neurotic coping behaviors like bar biting or sham chewing or other things. So you have you know, animals who are very intelligent, and all farm animals have feelings and intelligence and cognitive abilities that are completely denied and ignored, and the animals are totally abused in these systems. So we're trying to ban veal crates for the calves, gestation crates for these breeding pigs, and then battery cages for egg-laying hens. And battery cages are small wire enclosures where egg-laying hens are packed so tightly they can't stretch their wings. They're each given less space than a sheet of paper. They're given about 60 or so square inches of space, and they're constantly rubbing against these wire mesh bars, and their feathers rub off. They have bruises and abrasions on their bodies, and they'll live this way for about a year. And after a year, their egg production starts dropping off, so the industry will then kill them. Sometimes they send them to slaughterhouses if the slaughterhouses will take them. But because these hens are so skinny and because they're so beat up, a lot of times slaughterhouses don't want them anymore, so they're literally ground up alive. And there was actually a situation in Southern California around San Diego where there was an egg factory that needed to dispose of 30,000 unwanted hens. They called them spent hens when they're no longer productive after they've, you know, been in production for a year and their production drops off. So this egg factory had to get rid of 30,000 spent hens. And what he did was it's kind of shocking, but he took them and he threw them in a wood chipper. And a neighbor saw this, was appalled, and called local law enforcement, called us, and we all tried to get something done about this, to prosecute this guy for throwing live birds into a wood chipper.
Oh, my God.
But unfortunately, he was found not guilty of cruelty to animals.
Not guilty.
Not guilty, because this was considered to be a common practice. Hmm. And that's something most people, I think, are surprised to learn, is that farm animals are excluded from the Federal Animal Welfare Act. Farm animals are also excluded from most state anti-cruelty laws as long as the practices being done are considered to be common agricultural practices. And the folks that define what are common agricultural practices are the agribusiness people. So if the farming industry decides to do something, it becomes common and therefore legal and allowable.
How can change be made? I mean, you can't change it.
Yeah, well, right now the laws have been stacked very much against humane concerns and against animal welfare. But, you know, most citizens are stunned to learn how bad things have gotten. And so a big part of our work right now is just to raise awareness.
Right.
And to encourage people to look at what happens. And we have a website called factoryfarming.com that has lots of information showing exactly how these animals are raised, showing these pictures of pigs in gestation crates, calves in veal crates, and egg-laying hens in battery cages. And, you know, people need to make choices that they can feel good about. And, you know, right now, you know, the agribusiness industry does not want people to look at what's happening. They've actually passed laws increasing penalties for taking pictures of these places. So, I mean, it's an industry that depends on people not to look very closely or to think very much about the food that they're buying.
Yeah.
And, you know, our movement is encouraging people to think and to become aware
right.
of their food choice and to recognize that we don't need to support that industry. And, in fact, we can be much healthier by eating plants instead of animals.
Right. And you know what, Gene? You're right. People, they're not aware. I had no idea about what you're telling me, the details of what you're going into. People are not aware. They need to be educated. I guess that is the first step. Just making people aware of what's going on can lead to maybe some... Well, I love all the campaigns you're doing. It's making me sick to talk about it, but at least we're getting the word out. The next one you have, another sickening one, is foie gras. Hasn't California made some progress regarding this horrible practice?
Yes, yes, yes. Now, foie gras in French means fatty liver, and it's produced by shoving a pipe down the throats of ducks or geese and force-feeding them enormous quantities of food. And this causes their livers to expand over 10 times their normal size. And it is that fatty, diseased liver that is then sold as foie gras. In California, thankfully, a law was enacted. It was signed in 2004 by Governor Schwarzenegger to ban the force feeding of these animals to produce foie gras, and also to ban the sale of foie gras in California. Now, that law comes into effect in 2012, so in a few years it will be illegal to either produce or sell foie gras in California, and that's a very important step. It's currently the only state in this country that bans foie gras, and we hope others will follow. But, you know, California generally is ahead of the curve when it comes to these issues. You know, Proposition 2 is a good example of that. The ban on foie gras is another one. California, back in the 1990s, enacted legislation to limit the inhumane transportation and slaughter of downed animals. And we just hope other states will pick up and continue with similar proposals and similar measures. You know, most citizens don't like cruelty to animals. Most people, I think, are humane. But the irony is that they are unwittingly supporting abuse. And that's why, again, it's so important for people to learn more about their food choices and to make choices that they can feel good about that are consistent with their own humane values.
I find this day and age that we're living in that we've not come further along than we have. And just the example that we just spoke about, foie gras, and California is the only state in the country that has made any progress towards that. It's remarkable to me.
Well, it is. And, you know, the agribusiness industry is very influential. You know, for decades they have invested in the legislative political process, and you know, oftentimes, in fact, farmers become lawmakers, and then they become heads of agencies. And so you have an industry that is very entrenched, and you have a system that supports and caters to a certain farming model, this mass production cheap food model, where, you know, taxpayers are subsidizing the production of cheap corn and soybeans, for example, so that those grains can be fed to farm animals to produce meat that, you know, appears to be cheap at the grocery counter. But, you know, that's meat that costs a lot of money in terms of taxpayer subsidies mm-hmm. for cheap corn and soybeans. Also, water, you know, farmers pay far less for water than the normal market value. They pay less in property taxes. They get various incentives for marketing. There's export enhancement programs. Mm. And then the USDA has kind of dual purposes. The primary one is to support farmers. Now, the other one is to promote the health of consumers. They don't really spend as much time on promoting the health of consumers as they do on promoting farmers. And sometimes those two interests are very much in conflict. You know, it's healthy for consumers to eat more fruits and vegetables and, you know, plant foods. But agribusiness and the USDA has tended to promote more of the consumption of meat, milk, and eggs. And that's led us to the health problems we see in this country today, where obesity is a huge epidemic. Cancer and heart disease are the top two killers. And all of these problems can be lessened by eating more plants and less animals.
Tell us about your dairy-free campaign.
Well, you know, we grow up drinking cow's milk in this country, just like we grow up eating meat without really thinking about it and assuming that it's normal and appropriate. But we want people to ask themselves if they really need to consume these products. And in the case of milk, you know, human beings are the only species that drinks the milk of another species. So think about it. Why do we drink cow's milk? Why don't we instead drink dog's milk or pig's milk or rat's milk, you know? We don't really need the milk of another species. You know, human beings, as babies, you know, appropriately and naturally nurse from their mothers. But then at a certain point, they're weaned. and they don't need to be drinking milk anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And human beings are also the only species that drinks milk past weaning. So we want people to ask themselves if it's necessary to do those things. And if you look at our health, it is suffering because of the way we're eating. And, you know, the dairy industry is quick to say that drinking cow's milk helps prevent osteoporosis because cow's milk has lots of calcium in it.
Right.
But in our country, we have a lot of osteoporosis, and we also drink a lot of cow's milk. So that's really not the answer to preventing osteoporosis. And so we need to look at these things. We need to look at the facts and make choices that make sense. And for people who like milk, there's tons of great non-dairy alternatives.
Right.
Soy milk, rice milk, nut milk, oat milk, hemp milk. There's dozens of different kinds of alternatives that I'd encourage people to look at if they want to continue drinking milk. But certainly drinking cow's milk is not necessary for our health, and it's horrible for the animals. You know, modern dairy cows are pushed to produce 10 times more milk than they would normally. Their bodies break down, and in many cases, these cows are so sick they can't walk. In fact, the dairy industry is the number one contributor to the downed animal problem because most downed cows, animals too sick to walk, are dairy cows.
Mm.
In a healthy environment, a cow will live over 20 years, but on a modern dairy farm, she'll live about 4 years in production before she's sent off to slaughter, and then she becomes ground beef. Dairy cows, you know, are not retired to happy green pastures when they're no longer productive on today's modern dairies. They're sent off to slaughter. So the dairy industry abuses animals in various ways. And in addition to the way the cows suffer, you know, in order to produce milk, they have to have a calf every year. And so these cows are routinely impregnated, and that's another part of the stress on their bodies. They're pregnant and giving milk during most of their lives. And the calves are taken away from them immediately after birth. And if the calves are male, they're useless to the dairy industry, so they're oftentimes raised for veal. So the veal industry was literally born out of the dairy industry. And again, this is all for a product that's unnatural, that's unhealthy, and that we don't need, and that causes enormous suffering. And we just want people to think about it and to do what they feel is right. And I think most people, you know, again, do not think it's okay to abuse other animals, especially if we're gaining nothing positive out of it. And so I think change is inevitable when people think about these issues.
Gene, something that almost everyone is interested in is the labeling of foods. Now, tell us about your Truth Behind Labels campaign.
Yes.
And that's something I'm interested in, too, because I am a vegetarian, and I see these labels, free-range chicken eggs and free-range milk or free-range dairy, you know. Tell us about that.
Yeah, well, we people can get more information on our Truth Behind the Labels campaign, like our other campaigns at the farmsanctuary.org website. But that campaign, you know, seeks to create a situation where citizens know what they're buying. Because right now, a lot of these labels sound a lot better than they are. You know, many people for years have assumed that organic means humane.
Yeah.
When it doesn't.
Right.
Or that free-range means humane, when it really doesn't. A lot of these labels, you know, again, sound a lot better than they are. In the case of free-range, for example, you know, chickens only need to be given access to the outdoors. But access is not defined, and the outdoors is not defined. There have been situations where, you know, chickens have been confined in these massive warehouses by the thousands with a small little door to go out into a lousy little paddock, but that they never use. So they're basically living in factory farming conditions, but these products are being sold as free-range or humane or as if they're being raised in a significantly better way, which is just not the case.
Okay, so it's really misleading, and no one monitors that, huh?
That's right. It's not adequately monitored, and consumers are very much being misled, and that's what led us to this campaign, The Truth Behind the Labels. But you know, the fact that things are being labeled in this way is an indication that agribusiness realizes that citizens are not happy with the status quo. But rather than changing the status quo in terms of the way the animals are being treated and raised, they're just relabeling things and appealing to consumers' sentiments that way. And we think it's disingenuous and it needs to be exposed, and that's why we started this campaign. You know, another label that's completely misleading is the label natural. You see natural beef or natural whatever.
Right.
That does not apply to how the animals are raised. And so animals that are raised in factory farms can be sold as natural. Animals that are given hormones and antibiotics and various growth promoters can be sold as natural.
So then what does natural mean?
Practically nothing. I mean, natural means that once the animal's killed, that they cannot add certain chemicals to the meat. It has nothing to do with what happens before the animals are killed.
Wow.
So natural, you know, is one of those terms that is very misleading.
I think
most people assume that, you know, animals that are, you know, meat that is natural came from animals that were raised in somewhat of a natural situation.
Don't go away, please. More with our guest, Gene Bauer from Farm Sanctuary. I'm Dr. Lori Kirschner. This is Animals Today on News Talk 920 KPSI. Welcome back to Animals Today. I'm Dr. Lori Kirschner. We're speaking with Gene Bauer, co-founder and president of Farm Sanctuary. We've been talking about the major campaigns Farm Sanctuary is working on. We spoke about the No Downers campaign and the anti-confinement campaign, the foie gras, the dairy-free campaign, the Truth Behind Labels campaign, and if you want to learn more about these campaigns, which it's so interesting and incredible, check out farmsanctuary.org, and I just encourage you to. And I want to also remind you that this hour of Animals Today will be archived on our website, as all our shows are, animalstodayradio.com, and I ask you to encourage others to listen to the show. Learn the facts about factory farms. Gene, let's say someone wants to try to become a vegetarian. You have resources to help them get started so they don't have to worry about eating celery sticks and lettuce three meals a day. Tell us about that. And I guess that's called your Veg for Life campaign.
That's right. Our Veg for Life campaign encourages people to eat plants instead of animals. We have lots of recipes on the website and lots of information for people who are interested in living in a way that is healthier, more humane, and more environmentally sound. So yeah, check out the vegforlife.org website, and there's tons of information there.
And how about farm-raised fish? I meant to ask you about this earlier. This seems to be extremely popular and practiced around the world. Does Farm Sanctuary have an opinion about farm-raised fish?
Yes, we're concerned about the industrialization of aquaculture and fish production. And, as the oceans have been decimated through overfishing, there's now been a push to more domesticate fish and raise them in confined systems where you have thousands of fish kept together in small areas in water. And because they're in water, you know, feces and other contaminants are all over the place. So they're fed lots of, you know, antibiotics. They're given chemicals to address that. So farm-raised fish is bad for the animals. They're in confined, stressful situations, filthy situations, and they're then, you know, given lots of chemical additives to mitigate those problems, and then people are eating these fish. So, yeah, it's a big problem, and it's something that concerns us.
Gene, do you think everyone could be and should be a vegetarian?
I think everybody could be a vegetarian, absolutely, or actually even a vegan, you know, not eating any meat, but also not eating any fish or dairy products or eggs. I've been a vegan since 1985, and, you know, it's been good for my health. And many people I've spoken to who have eaten the typical U.S. diet, you know, full of meat, milk, and eggs, have had problems. And when they've decided to make the choice to go vegan, their health has improved markedly. So I think everybody can.
I hear people saying all the time, I need my meat and my hamburgers just to get my protein and feel normal. Would you acknowledge the possibility that some people are truly physiologically different from you and me and truly need meat just to be and feel normal?
Well, I think we're all physiologically different in some ways, but, you know, I don't know that it's necessary for anybody to eat meat. Now, if the science shows it, then I'm open to that, but I've not seen any science to indicate that. And what I consider to be the most authoritative research on the topic was done by Colin Campbell, nutritional biochemist at Cornell University. He wrote a book called The China Study that talks about human health and nutrition. And he did the largest study ever done to compare human health and nutrition. And he concluded that human beings are basically a vegetarian species.
Mm.
So, I think that the science indicates that we are much better off when we eat plants instead of animals. Certainly, we should be eating more plants than we are now and less animals than we are now. I believe we can eat only plants and no animals, but that's something that we'll just have to, you know, assess over time what makes sense scientifically.
Can you go into more detail about the negative environmental impact of factory farming?
Oh, gosh, yes. To raise animal foods, you need to produce lots of plant foods. You know, farm animals eat corn and soybeans and other plant foods in order to put on weight. You know, if we ate those plant foods directly instead of feeding them through animals, it'd be 10 times more efficient. So it, you know, requires huge amounts of acreage to grow animal foods instead of plant foods. Also, because you can find these animals by the thousands in small areas, they produce tons and tons of manure, which the environment cannot accommodate. That manure tends to run off into waterways, it gets into groundwater, and oftentimes this manure is polluted with chemicals because these animals are routinely fed antibiotics. Also, these factory farms use these intense chemical cleansers that get into the waterways. So factory farms pollute the environment, they waste resources, and they also create and emit greenhouse gases. The World Watch Institute recently came out with a report talking about how over 50% of the human-generated greenhouse gases came from animal agriculture. And prior to that, the United Nations came out with a report talking about how the livestock industry contributes more to global warming than the entire transportation industry. So although there's lots of attention being focused on driving vehicles that waste less or changing our light bulb, that's all very good. But the single most important thing we can do to take a bite out of global warming is to eat plants instead of animals. You know, a vegan driving a Hummer contributes less to greenhouse gases than the meat eater driving a bicycle.
Mm. So it is true, cows really are responsible for producing a large proportion of the greenhouse gases, and that's obviously contributing to our global warming. So every environmentalist or anyone who cares about the environment to any degree ought to be a vegetarian.
Absolutely. I mean, if you really care about the environment, you shouldn't be eating animals.
Right.
You know, I think I was talking to somebody the other day, actually, at the farmer's market up near where we live, and you know, we encourage people to go to farmer's markets and to get involved with community-supported agriculture programs, and to, you know, buy products from farmers that you know as much as you can. But I was talking to one farmer, actually, at this farmer's market, and he said that, you know, if you want to make a statement against global warming, drive your bicycle to school or to work or to the market or whatever. But if you want to do something about global warming, go vegetarian.
Right.
And
Gene,
I think that's something to take home.
Right. That's a good point. Thank you for expressing that. You have a book, and you recently been on a book tour. Tell us about your book. I believe it's called Farm Sanctuary in Hard Times.
No, it's called Farm Sanctuary, Changing Hearts and Minds About Animals and Food.
Thank you.
And that book chronicles the growth and the work of Farm Sanctuary. It talks about our investigations into farms, finding animals literally in trash cans or on piles of dead animals. It talks about documenting the conditions where animals are in these small cages where they can't move for their entire lives. And it talks about these individuals who we've been able to rescue and how once they come to Farm Sanctuary and they're treated with kindness, they respond. You know, like human beings who've been abused or any animals who've been abused, it takes a while for them to, again, learn to trust and when they're in a safe place. And the book talks about that. It also talks about some of our legislative efforts and our advocacy efforts to change the system and to challenge some of the laws that are currently in place that allow animals to be seen just as commodities, that allow agribusiness to get away with the types of abuses of animals and the environment that it gets away with. And also labor. I mean, you know, agribusiness is treated so in such a preferential way. The minimum wage on farms, for example, is less than the minimum wage in other sectors of business. So this is an industry that gets away with abusing animals, abusing workers, abusing the environment, misleading consumers, and frankly, you know, doing an awful lot to destroy the planet. So Farm Sanctuary, Changing Hearts and Minds About Animals and Food, the book, talks about all of this.
The website is farmsanctuary.org, and I strongly encourage listeners to visit this wonderful resource. And, Gene, let's say someone is inspired to do something in their lives for the animals. What would you recommend?
Well, the single most important thing all of us can do is to be mindful of our food choices and to make choices that are sensible and humane. And that means, I think, eating plants instead of animals. And I would urge people to consider adopting a vegan lifestyle. And if they can't do it all at once, to eat plant foods, you know, one day a week, or do it one meal at a time. And, you know, in the case of, like, spaghetti and meatballs, just leave the meatballs off. Maybe add some broccoli or veggies to it. In the case of pizza, leave the cheese off and the pepperoni off. And, you know, when you start eating in a vegan way, oftentimes you start exploring new cuisine, you know, eating Ethiopian food or Chinese food or Thai food or Mexican food. And, you know, you can get burritos, for example. I would just leave the cheese off and add guacamole and rice or some other way. But there's a lot of creativity that you can bring to eating in a vegan way. And, you know, this morning, for example, I'm having hash browns and pancakes, all vegan. And it's easy to do.
Right. And there's also, you know, meat substitutes that aren't bad. I've enjoyed those.
You're absolutely right.
There's soy meatballs with your spaghetti.
That's a very good point. There's soy meatballs and there's meatless meat substitutes that are becoming more and more available in mainstream grocery stores. So if somebody likes that taste, they can certainly get those products.
Right, right. Gene, there's one thing I forgot to ask you, which is sort of become a big topic. Does Farm Sanctuary have a position regarding animal cloning?
Well, Farm Sanctuary is against the commodification of sentient life, and cloning is part of that. So, yes, we are against cloning animals.
Very good. Gene Bauer with Farm Sanctuary. Check it out, farmsanctuary.org. Gene, thank you so much for sharing all this information with us, and we really appreciate it. We'd love to have you on again.
Thank you very much. It's my pleasure.
I want to just inform you that Save a Pet and Lend a Paw, two nonprofit foundations here in our Coachella Valley, Save a Pet and Lend a Paw. They're having a luncheon and a fashion show to benefit the abused, homeless, and neglected animals in our valley. It's going to be held on Saturday, November 21st at noon. Please call Lynn if you want more information. Her number is 760-218-1687. And I also want to remind you that the last Saturday of every month, Desert Paws puts out an ad in the Desert Sun with many wonderful dogs and cats from our local shelters just waiting to be a part of a loving family, desperate to be a part of a loving family. If not adopted soon, they will be euthanized. Desert Paws has been doing this for the past 10 years. The last Saturday of every month, which was yesterday. I always request from our shelters to include in this ad the adoptable animals that have been sitting in our shelters the longest. We're trying to give these animals another chance for a life, a chance to have a home. If you don't get the local paper and you want to see what animals are on the ad, you can log onto the website desertpaws.org, and the ad will be available to view. That's desertpaws.org. You can also email me if you want, Dr. Laurie at desertpaws.org. So, excuse me, Dr. Laurie, animalstodayradio.com. Tell us if you like the show. Give us some of your suggestions. And if you have suggestions about guests you want or topics for the show, go ahead and email us, animalstodayradio.com. But if you're thinking of getting a dog or cat, please do not buy one from a breeder or a pet store. Take a look at the ad, or simply go to your local shelter and consider adopting one of the many beautiful animals desperate for a loving home. In most of these cases, you will be saving a life. And you're going to feel good about it, too. So thanks for considering this. Okay, I appreciate you listening in on Animals Today. This is Dr. Laurie Kirshner. I'm encouraging you to nurture your love and compassion for the only other beings sharing our planet, the animals.